Morning, everybody.
I'm grateful to have you guys in the building this morning. I'm also grateful for the folks that are joining us through a camera in the back there now. And just I think we haven't been doing that for very long, and I'm just grateful that those who thought it was a good idea thought it was a good idea before today, and we have that means available for people to tune in and listen so that they can stay home and stay safe and comfortable where they are, and just grateful for that foresight and God's provision there. Unless you've been living under a rock for the last couple of weeks, and given the circumstances, that may not have been a bad place to be, you have probably encountered some bit of news that has left you weary. The coronavirus has dominated world headlines and social media with the threat of the illness itself, the impact of the wild swings it has on the stock market, travel bans around the world, and of all things, the availability of toilet paper. Saudi Arabia and Russia are engaged in a price war and a demand-depressed oil market, driving prices to uncomfortably low levels. And then there's the always ever-present encouragement of bipartisan American politics in an election year. Heavy on our minds are the decisions of whether to attend a certain gathering or practice social distancing, whether it is prudent to opt for a fist bump over a hug, the prospects of our local economy and in that diminished oil market, and whether or not I can tolerate another campaign commercial from the candidate on the other side of the aisle. I think it's safe to say that the last couple of weeks have given us an appreciation for the idea of rest. And this morning, we're going to look to our Bibles to discover the source of true rest and the futility in searching for it in our own strength. We're going to do a fair amount, by the way, of background this morning, because I think it's very important as we get into our actual text that we understand from where it comes from. So our text this morning is going to be Matthew 12, 8 to 14. You can get your page marker ready for when we get there. It'll be a minute. But that's the second of two illustrations Matthew gives for a set of statements that Jesus makes at the end of Matthew chapter 11. Jesus makes these statements as an invitation to those whom he desires to reveal the Father. Jesus makes these statements in an effort to say, I know the Father, and I would really like it if you knew the Father as well. Jesus gives this invitation in Matthew 11, 28 to 30. He says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Jesus tells us that our rest is found in him, and that coming under his teaching and his leadership is to have someone come alongside us who can help us with our heavy burdens. Jesus and his precepts lighten our load as opposed to other teachers and teachings that we might hear, which weigh us down. Jesus says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And Matthew begins chapter 12 with two stories that illustrate that truth. Matthew 12, 1 to 7, Matthew tells the story of the encounter between Jesus and his disciples on one side and the disciples on the other as they go through the grain fields and they pick great heads of grain to eat. The Pharisees aren't accusing the disciples of stealing, as this practice of entering your neighbor's crops and plucking with your hands so that you can be filled is expressly allowed in Deuteronomy 23, 25. I'll give you, you can look at that later. What the Pharisees are upset about and what they are accusing the disciples of doing is breaking the fourth commandment. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. This is why the Pharisees are upset that the disciples are going through the grain fields and picking grain, rubbing it between their hands and blowing on it so they can have something to eat. That's work if you're a Pharisee. In lodging this complaint against the disciples, Lewis Barbary Jr. in his commentary on Matthew says the Pharisees are essentially calling the plucking of wheat reaping, rubbing the wheat heads between one's palms threshing, and blowing away the chaff winnowing. I don't know if that's what it looks like to you when a kid walks through and picks a head of grain, that they're actually doing physical, crazy, heavy labor, but that's what the Pharisees are accusing the disciples of. We begin to see the weariness and the heavy loads that Jesus is talking about his people suffering under. We see Jesus lecture the Pharisees from the scriptures in an effort to lighten those loads, as he excuses King David's transgressing of the law in 1 Samuel, we remember that David and his men go to the tabernacle to eat the showbread, the consecrated bread there, which was only lawful for the priests. But Jesus excuses him here. Jesus also excuses the temple priests who have to work on the Sabbath by definition of what they do. If we have a law that says you're not supposed to break the Sabbath, you can't work on the Sabbath, and the guys who actually have to do work on the Sabbath in the temple are kind of hosed. It's a bad deal. And Jesus says, I'm going to grant them leniency in the face of the Pharisees' heavy-handed legalities. Then Jesus makes this statement in chapter 12, verse 7. But if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not a sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. Here we see Jesus' further intent to ease our weariness. Jesus tells the Pharisees and disciples that he's not ultimately seeking external satisfaction of the law, but rather a heart that mirrors his own. I desire compassion and not a sacrifice is a quote from the Old Testament prophet Hosea in chapter 6, verse 6. If you remember who Hosea is, God tells Hosea the prophet to go find a wife, and he lets him know, oh, by the way, this woman's going to be a prostitute later. And then he goes and marries, and Hosea does what he's supposed to do, and the woman does what God says. She turns into a prostitute, and God instructs Hosea to love her anyway. And in this, Hosea addresses the harlotry of the people of Israel and Judah that they have committed in worshiping these idols. What essentially he's saying without saying it is he's saying, look, Pharisees, you guys look a whole lot like that prostitute of a wife that Hosea had. And you can imagine how upset they would have been at this, how enraged, because the Old Testament is their life, right? So they knew what Jesus was telling them. This is a harsh condemnation Jesus makes against the Pharisees. The Greek word used for compassion or mercy, as we see in Matthew here, can be translated as loving kindness in Hebrew. That's the Psalm 136 loving kindness that Scott read earlier, in which we see so many of the attributes of God are rooted in this idea. Here in Matthew chapter 12, this loving kindness is really that which the Lord desires, rather than the sterile robotic execution of a set of rules. So all that background leads us into our text here. We're going to get to it. We'll be looking at the second illustration Matthew gives for Jesus' theme, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And we see another confrontation between Jesus and the Pharisees, this time in the synagogue and on the Sabbath. And we see a man with a withered hand. If you have your Bibles, please open them up and we'll read Matthew 12, verses 8 to 14. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Moving on from there, he entered their synagogue. There he saw a man who had a shriveled hand. And in order to accuse him, they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He replied to them, who among you, if he had a sheep that fell into a pit on the Sabbath, wouldn't take hold of it and lift it out? A person is worth far more than a sheep, so it is lawful to do what is good on the Sabbath. Then he told the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out, and it was restored, good as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might kill him. In this illustration, we see that our own efforts and attempts at satisfying the law are powerless to meet our deepest needs. But in Jesus, we find the mercy that satisfies our deepest need. Jesus says in verse 8, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. What he's saying is, authority doesn't come from the law itself, but from the author of the law. And if you doubt this to be true, I want you to conduct an experiment for me when you leave. I want you to go home and look across your fence into your neighbor's yard, and I want you to try and boss his dog. You can just go ahead and tell him to quit barking or to roll over or to lie down, and you can give him all the laws and the most forceful, commanding voice you can muster, and I want to see what happens to that dog. Because in my experience, when I try and boss my sister's dog or my parents' dog, they don't pay no attention to me. They do the little dog thing where they look at you and they cock their head and they're like, what are you talking? Who do you think you are trying to tell me what to do? You ain't my boss. And that's what Jesus is getting at here. He's saying he is Lord of the Sabbath. The Pharisees might get upset about the fact that people are breaking rules, but Jesus says, you can get upset. It's not about the rules. It's about me. I am Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus says, and so I therefore have the authority to make the rules. We then get to verse 9, which is kind of a transition verse in between the two stories from the grain field to the synagogue. But what I really like about it, what I really like about enjoying studying the Bible is you look at this verse and it says this, moving on from there, he entered their synagogue. And we kind of just skip past that, right? We know that we're moving from A to B, but what really gets me jazzed up as I see this is what I'd call a popcorn verse. God says, Jesus is about to go to the synagogue on the Sabbath. So what you need to do is you need to go get some popcorn out of your cupboard and go put it in the microwave and sit down and pay attention because something exciting is about to happen. And that's exactly what we see here. We see a show. Jesus puts on a show here shortly. In verse 10, we read, there he saw a man who had a shriveled hand, and in order to accuse him, they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? I believe that a group will take on the personality of its leader. That which is emphasized by the leader is emphasized by the group. That which is commended by the leader is commended by the group. That which is disdained by the leader is disdained by the group. You can imagine then the atmosphere in this particular synagogue was one of a rigid adherence to the law. Jesus says in verse 9, moving on from there, he entered their synagogue. This is the same people who were in the grain field pitching a fit about grabbing some grains, heads of grain. This is that people's synagogue. So you can imagine the air and the atmosphere that would have been there. This man with the withered hand in this synagogue would have learned that Yahweh was a God that was all about the rules. He would have learned, no doubt, about dietary restrictions, about ritual washings, about the proper protocol for the various offerings. And without a doubt, he would have learned what was allowed and what was not allowed to do on the Sabbath. This man would have learned about all of these rules he was expected to follow, and he would have noticed that none of these rules did anything to heal his withered hand. The same thing proves true in our lives today. You may be here today and recognize and know that there is a God of the universe, and that God gave a guy named Moses a set of rules. He wrote them on a stone tablet. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal. You may understand these rules, you may even live by these rules. But the one thing you will notice about all of the rules is that they never lift a finger to ease the burden in your heart when you attend the funeral of someone you love, when you face uncertainties in your employment, or when you're left to wonder about a virus that saturates your newsfeed. We see that following the rules for the sake of following the rules is powerless to meet our deepest needs. And then we see that rigid rule following is not only powerless to scratch where we itch, but it also produces callous hearts. The Pharisees can see the need of the man with the withered hand. It's why they ask about the legality of healing him on the Sabbath, because they recognize that within their midst is a man in need of healing. And we see a callous lack of concern for this man while maintaining a focus on the robotic, legalistic, mechanistic, hollow satisfaction of that which their law and their Sabbath requires. But before we look down our noses at the Pharisees, I think this should serve a caution to all of us, lest we get caught up in a mere religion. A religion which consists of only filing into a building on Sunday and filing out of the building later that day, producing only compulsion to adhere to a code or to a teaching without producing in us a longing to see the grace and mercy and redemption of others. If all we're concerned with is checking the box of showing up on Sunday without concern with those we're surrounded by on Monday, Tuesday, all the way through Saturday, then we may look down our nose at the Pharisees, but we are a Pharisee. In verses 8 to 10, we see that the law and our own efforts are powerless to meet our deepest needs. And that being the case, what do we find? Where do we find the fulfillment of those needs? Jesus tells us in verses 11 to 12. He replied to them, who among you, if he had a sheep that fell into a pit on the Sabbath, wouldn't take hold of it and lift it out? A person is worth far more than a sheep. So it is lawful to do what is good on the Sabbath. Jesus says, look, Pharisees, you and I both know that if you had a sheep, if it was your sheep, and it fell into a pit or fell into a well on the Sabbath, there's no way that you're going to go ahead and wait until the day after before you fetch that sheep out of the hole. The Pharisees here, and we don't understand how rapid, I think Jesus at this point when he's talking to the Pharisees doesn't give them a whole lot of time to talk because they don't get what's going on, and so he asks them a lot of rhetorical questions because he understands their ignorance. But even in that, we don't see the Pharisees interject anywhere in here that, well, no, I certainly would wait until the Sabbath, after Sabbath day was over to fetch this sheep. They don't say that. It's because that's not the way they would work. These Pharisees, even in their treachery, as they attempt to accuse Jesus, recognize that the law is to be eschewed for mercy. If you've lived a life in which all of your hopes and plans were rooted in your hard work and your dedication and your perseverance, and then you've come up against a time when all that you've worked for was threatened to be undone, you've recognized the need for mercy. Our human experience proves the necessity of mercy. Jesus then asks a question, and again, it's rhetorical because those to whom he poses the question more than likely aren't willing to answer correctly, even if they know the right answer. But Jesus asks this question, how much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? This is another verse as we read through the Bible, we just take for granted its truth, right? We don't think about analyzing these words for what their meaning is. But in order to gain an appreciation for the point Jesus is trying to make and to press his intent home, I want to answer that question. Jesus did not eschew the glory of the throne of heaven seated at the right hand of the God of the universe for a sheep. He did that for a man. Jesus did not endure the physical, mental, and emotional drain of fasting for 40 days only to be tempted by a being he created for a sheep. He did that for a woman. Jesus did not ride into Jerusalem on the colt of a donkey showered with hosannas and praise only to have the same crowd later that week give him up to be mocked and scourged and a crown of thorns pressed into his brow for a sheep. He did that for a sister. He did that for a brother. He did that for a mother. And he did that for a father. Jesus did not suffer the pain of every blow of the hammer that drove the nails through his wrists and feet. He did not suffer the pain of the weight of his body hanging from those nails as the weight of the blackness of the sin of the world hung from his neck for a sheep. He did that for you. He did that for me. How much more valuable then is a man than sheep? Infinitely more valuable. Jesus says that which is most important to save is most worthy of mercy. Then Jesus has proven to the Pharisees that mercy is preferred and necessary to address the needs of a sheep. And through his life, he has proven how much more valuable the life of a man than a sheep. Jesus then makes a statement about how we are to evaluate our actions in view of the law. He says, so then, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. In other words, Jesus tells us that it will always fulfill God's law in doing what is right. Sabbath or no. Having discussed the impotence of the law and the necessity of mercy, Jesus now puts mercy on display and we see his power in it. Verses 13 to 14. Then he told the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out and it was restored as good as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted against them as how they might kill him. Jesus merely instructs the man to extend his hand to receive God's grace and make that hand whole. Jesus demonstrates awareness and compassion and loving kindness in relation to this man's need. Jesus demonstrates the power to satisfy this man's need. Jesus is aware of your need this morning. If you're out from the weight of day-to-day decisions surrounding how to handle yourself in the midst of a prolific virus, I ask, have you prayed about it? If the volatility of national and global markets has you anxious about how to interact with your savings or your employment, I ask, have you prayed about it? Because the God who counts you more valuable than sheep has conquered death itself, and he is powerful to conquer our fear and our anxiety and our unknown. While we are powerless in our strength to affect many of the things this world throws at us, Jesus is not. If you're tired this morning of trying to manage everything, or if you're tired this morning of that one thing that plagues you that you're just so fed up with having to deal with, I'd invite you to quit toiling under the tyranny of trying to solve everything in your own strength and start resting in the mercy of the Son. The invitation this morning is, with so many of the things that we come here and we talk about and we know, it's not that we're not talking about it, but it's like the elephant in the room, right? There's a virus that's going on out there that has kept many people away from this building. And it's a little awkward because I'm a hugger, I'm a handshaker, you know, and then we come into this place and I don't want to offend anybody or interfere into places I shouldn't be. But it's the reality of where we are, all right? I'm grateful today to serve a God who doesn't need me to do everything. He took away every sin that I've got by hanging on a tree for my sin. And I stay saved because of that same sacrifice. Jesus doesn't tell me, hey, yeah, I saved you, but you need to go ahead and make sure that you're doing good every single day so that you stay saved. I ain't got to worry about that. Jesus doesn't need my help to make sure I stay saved. I am grateful this morning to serve a Lord, to serve Jesus Christ, where I don't have to worry about carrying on everything all day, every day. And so I'm going to ask you this morning, if there's something in your life that has plagued you, is there a ritual or a rote or something that you're doing every day because maybe you're scared of God? God is going to punish me if I don't do this thing. I ask you to analyze that and throw that garbage away. That's not the way that our God works. And if you're doing these things, and it's right that we do these things, but you're doing it out of a duty to God and not out of a love to God, I want you to analyze the root of those things also and say, why am I doing these things? Why do I persist in doing these things without love for the guy I'm doing them for? Because he's worthy of our love, and he's awesome, and he should be, worship and love should be a natural response for a God who gave up everything so that we can have everything. And so I just ask you, as you've got something you need to give up to God that you're tired of carrying, that you let him carry it. That if there's something that weighs heavy on your shoulders, that you would throw that garbage at the foot of the cross, because that's where it belongs. Jesus Christ is the one in whom we trust amidst any kind of pandemic or stock market, anything or any of it. Jesus is worth our love and our adorations.
Everyone needs compassion, love that's never failing. So let mercy fall on me. Everyone needs forgiveness, the kindness of a Savior, the hope of nations. Savior, can move the mountains. My God is mighty to save. He is mighty to save forever. Author of salvation, he rose and conquered the grave. Oh, Jesus conquered the grave. Find me, all my fears and failures, and fill my life again. I give my life to follow everything I believe in, and now I glory of the risen King Jesus. Shine your light and let the whole world see. We're singing for the glory of the risen King. Savior, He can move the mountains. My God is mighty to sing. He is mighty. Yes, He is mighty to save forever. Author of salvation, He rose and conquered the grave. Oh, Jesus conquered the grave. Shine your light and let the whole world see. We're singing for the glory. For the glory of the risen King.